This is Mae Brussel. It's broadcast number 664, August the 27th, 1984. The news we shared just a year ago this week, and those stories are still in the news at the present time. Benigno Aquino was murdered in the Philippines. That was just a year ago, and I'll do more about the investigation of that murder that has been kept up to exposing probably the highest military officers in the Philippines 1 year after his murder. I also was doing a great deal in the weeks a year ago on John DeLorean. That story is very much in the news, and we'll continue with the DeLorean expose in detail because there are certain parts of the DeLorean story I want to reemphasize because of their importance to the Nazi connections, and the Nazi connections go right back to our CIA and the murder of John Kennedy, and I'm not going to lose those threads for you, even though there are many pressing stories in the news. I want to keep you updated on the DeLorean story. I did have a diagram or a chart just a year ago this week, another one of those diagrams, on the link of the Vatican and Vatican intelligence with Father Felix Morleon, who moved to the United States, William Donovan of the OSS, who funded Morleon while the war was going on, and then the Grand Cross Award, the Order of St. Sylvester given to Donovan and James Angleton knighted. And that was just a year ago that we were talking about those things, and I want to go back to those stories again in terms of the news this week and the celebration in France where the Nazis surrendered, and they had their various parades and things this year. When it happened that the Nazis surrendered in Paris, they had no idea in their minds at all, I know, that Mr. Donovan and Alan Dulles and James Angleton at that very moment, or a year before the surrender even, were making arrangements for the Nazis to come back into power. I was talking about the network of the OSS, the CIA, Mussolini, and the Vatican, and in that year, and particularly with one new book that just came out, it is more and more evident how strong the links were with the people who funded Hitler in the wars, to start his wars, playing a major role in setting up World War III and the process of arming and infiltrating all labor and so-called leftist organizations to get us to the point where we are today, the full cycle in Dallas with the Republican Convention and Young Americans for Freedom. So last year I was talking about these very important connections. If you don't have that tape, it's number 612. You should add it to part of your collection if you're new listeners. I think all of them are important, but this ties back to many things that, as I say, are in the news today. I don't have time now this week, of course, but in the weeks to come, just briefly to mention the Hitler diary trials is going on. Don't pass that off as just a cover-up to make a few bucks. They made many millions and gave it to the Waffen-SS. Be reading those articles. I'll be doing a lot on Ronald Reagan, the New Right, and Jerry Falwell. An update on Ed Meese, the Reagan appointments, the efforts for the new Constitution, Reagan's plans for Grenada, the FBI investigating those forged documents, blaming the KGB for sending letters at the time of the Olympics. There are many important stories. Also, last week I talked about that war conference here in Monterey, the Navy Postgraduate School, of the top echelon who would be responsible for invading Cuba or Nicaragua and eventually making war with the Soviet Union. And just this week after that conference, there were articles on the news media and the Pentagon and how they'll handle the future invasions. And that is terribly important. There's so many articles on that, it would take one program alone. And George Shultz promising that we should free all of Europe. And there are stories that relate to past broadcasts that I hope I'll someday be able to get on the air. But these are a few that I want to develop for you as soon as possible. But don't think I'm ignoring them now. If you see them in the news, I noticed they're there, but we, of course, have only 1 hour a week, and I'll get back to them eventually. Now, the Republican convention was over. Abe Mellencoff of the San Francisco Chronicle, who writes a little editorial article, he has a column every 5 days a week, not every day, has a story, Memory of Kennedy Still Alive in Dallas. And he tells about the special burden of guilt for the mayor and the Republican convention, how the mayor hoped that the President Kennedy's assassination story was, quote, done, gone, and forgiven. Mayor A. Stark Taylor thought that this would be a time to forgive and forget Dallas and show how gracious they are. And then he goes on to say remarks about the arson that was set at the Texas School Book Depository, and that this story seemed to make the news the same day as the president's acceptance speech, sort of crowding out the acceptance speech or reminding him that this building was there. They tried to erase it by refurbishing the building. They renamed it the Dallas County Administration Building. Mellencamp, of course, says that's where Lee Harvey Oswald hid and fired John Kennedy, fired the rifle on John Kennedy. Of course, Abe Mellencamp, the brother of Sherman Mellencamp, Sherman is the head of the UCLA School of Medicine. I went through Beverly High with these fellows. I knew them when I was younger, particularly Sherman, and then he went off to Stanford. He's head of the medical school and hires Dr. Jolly West of the CIA, who gave that one second epilepsy of Jack Ruby when he killed Lee Harvey Oswald. Important thing about that story, of course, is not only was the President of the United States murdered there, but the man who allegedly shot him said, I'm innocent, and 2 days later, he's killed in the police department, and they think that that memory will wash away. Well, somebody set fire to the building. Nobody knows who. It's a brick building. Was it symbolic? Did they want to remind people of it? Did they want the electronic news to keep saying over and over for another generation, this is where Lee Harvey Oswald shot John Kennedy? The printed papers were different. The Los Angeles Times says the Texas School Book Depository is the brick structure from which Lee Harvey Oswald allegedly fired the shot that killed President John Kennedy. I mentioned the allegedly that's in the building a few weeks ago. Some of the Kennedy memorabilia was destroyed. And, of course, this reminds me very much of Nazi Germany trying to destroy these items so that we don't have to live or face them. At one time, they were going to tear the whole building down. It's ridiculous to think, I guess, that a fire would do it, but it certainly called attention to the event when the when Ronald Reagan was there with the convention. The Los Angeles Herald Examiner quotes four newsmen from Texas, and some of them had a very big role, three of them, of covering up the murder of John Kennedy. One was Dan Rather, the other was Walter Cronkite, and the other was Bill Moyers, press secretary for Lyndon Johnson, and also Bob Schieffer, S-C-H-I-E-F-F-E-R. All four of those men come from Texas. Dan Rather had a particularly important role in covering up this murder. Not only was he there at the time of the assassination, but when the Abraham Zapruder films are shown and Kennedy's head goes backward, indicating a frontal shot, he on the film says over and over again, the head goes forward. Well, Dan Rather thought in an interview that it was silly to hold Dallas responsible or to link it with the Kennedy assassination. This is a quotation from Rather. He says, many Americans are not old enough to remember the Kennedy assassination. And after all, Los Angeles was where Robert Kennedy was killed, and you didn't find people moping around about that. Moping around about that. That's old Dan Rather. You can take him or leave him, but he continues, like, what are you worrying about that? Robert Kennedy was not a president of the United States, but he was running against Richard Nixon, who lost to John Kennedy, and then Sirhan survived. He was not killed in the Los Angeles Police Department. So to compare us, or to say who's moping and who isn't moping, I don't think that he's the right person to quote in the paper, but of course he's been part of that for 20 years, and how else do you make the multi-million bucks on the major TV channels? But read your lines and read them well. Now, getting back to the Aquino murder in the Philippines, 1 year later, news story, top officer linked in plot to kill Aquino. The panel may accuse the nation's top military officer of ordering the killing, that they suggested that he was involved in the killing. Another article, 500,000 stage an anti-Marcos march in Manila on the anniversary of this death. And another story, I have maybe a year's supply of stories, and I don't know how carefully you've been following in your newspapers. Here's one. Mystery still shrouds opposition leader's death. Unsolved Aquino assassination brings discontent and changes the Philippines. Quite a contradiction here. Marcos of the Philippines is a military dictator who doesn't want opposition or elections. But in the military dictatorship, there's a panel that has more freedom than the Warren Commission. We are supposed to be a free country. People think we have free news media, free access. Our courts work. They don't work. We don't have freedom. The Warren Commission was filled with influence and lies and people that should have been off of there, like John J. McCloy and Gerald Ford, put on there by Richard Nixon and Alan Dulles of the CIA. They had a vested interest in keeping the Russian, Tsarist Russian, Nazi, Vatican, Mafia connections away from the investigation, and they did it, and they lied to the American people. So with all our elaborate investigations, there's more freedom in the Philippines to continue the investigation than there is in the United States. This week, the French commemorated the liberation of Paris. Big celebration, and on August the 25th, 1944, was the surrender of the German commandant, and the people today were out there celebrating this liberation. And as I said before, they little did they know what was going on. While they were happy that the Nazis surrendered, August 25th, 1944, go back to that little diagram I have on broadcast number 612 and see what was going on while these people thought they were going to be free. It's just ridiculous. This new book that I like very much, the new one on Delachaye, that I will be quoting over and over again, Stefano Delachaye, and Tom Davis from Research will be obtaining those books. It's published in London, and he's going to get them. Many of you have his address. If not, I'll give it to you later or on the next broadcast. He will be able to get this book and make it available to you. And just the part about France I want to refer to because of the celebration this week. And early in the book, it tells how the CIA, the National Security Council, which just got into operation by 1947, by March of 48, the National Security Council was funding the Italian legislature and influencing the Italian election and setting up clandestine anti-communist movements with financial help and military help from the United States government. A Colonel J. Willems, W-I-L-L-E-M-S, has a document, The Importance of Recognizing Revolutionary Anti-Communist Forces, which were, in fact, directly from Mussolini's secret guard, his Gestapo, the OVRA, the O-V-R-A, those are the capital letters, that was set up like Lucio Gelli. Now, the first thing we did, the CIA did, it was to purge the socialist and pro-resistance elements in their administration. This came out of the United States Embassy in Rome by February the 10th, 1948, set up a new police corps with U.S. advisors and the OVRA veterans, those are Mussolini's veterans, and this police corps will be similar to the venture in France. You see, we had Klaus Barbie in our control with Henry Kissinger from 1945. In 1944, they were celebrating in Paris. They were rid of the Nazis, and a few months later, when the war was over in 1945, Henry Kissinger was sent into the 970th Detachment, later renamed the 66th CIC Detachment, and I have charts on those and have done programs on that. And that new book, The Price of Power by Seymour Hersh, tells about Henry Kissinger and Omer Amigal with the displaced people and the Nazi former Nazis from Nazi Germany who were going to work with other Nazi collaborators. And Klaus Barbie had a hold on France and set up these cells before the CIA came into Italy. That's very important to remember the chronology here, that we had Klaus Barbie with John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles and Henry Kissinger and, of course, Fritz Kramer in Germany setting up the network in France. So Italy was to copy the example of France in this book on Delachaye on the origins of the resurgence of Nazism and fascism, says, to combat the threat of communism, France had organized small, efficient police cells. Keep in mind now The Los Angeles Police Department, the Anti-Terrorist Division, the Police Intelligence Division, J. Paul, with links to the Pentagon, to Mr. John Singlaub of Western Goals in Taiwan with the World Anti-Communist League, and Edward Teller with the hydrogen bomb and the Defense Department Space Wars. Our police departments are set up like these cells, and these cells were organized from the end of 1945, 46 to 48, in France, in Italy, and then, of course, in the United States. This book says, to repeat this, France organized small, efficient police cells outside the normal police structure, but under the supervision of the national security. These cells were equipped with finance and exceptional resources and personnel. They were limited in number, a few, trained to perfection for their task. Italy then set up their secret anti-communist police group, relying on the old-fashioned secret police to provide the basic personnel at structure and organization levels. And it goes on, and I'll do more on this in this book, of course, continuously every week. The group was under the organization of James Angleton, and, of course, Alan Dulles and Angleton worked closely with each other in Bern, Switzerland, and in the OSS, and with the Vatican. Both of those names I have associated on charts and in articles, in the Rebel article I did on the Nazis and the JFK assassination. So this week, when the French were celebrating their 40 years of freedom since they kicked out the Nazis, I wish that some of the people in France would get a little modern and go to this literature, or maybe they have, I don't know, and put the connections there, not only of Barbie, who's been arrested but hasn't been tried for 2 years, who's sitting there, to the relationship of the United States security as soon as our CIA was formed, and before it was formed in the OSS, and then the Special Operations Division and the Special Services Unit that incorporated Nazis, used the expertise of Hitler and Mussolini, the Gestapo, the OVRA, then moved to United States of America to set up our police departments with these anti-terrorist divisions. That's why the word terrorist is so important. The excuse for these people is their terrorist divisions. Now, this is the anniversary on September the 1st of the Korean Airline going down. And there's an article coming out from the Soviet Union claiming the United States bomb blew up the 007. Moscow radio said yesterday that the Korean Airline was shot down by the Soviet when they attacked them. They sent a missile that would down them, similar to Gary Powers of the U-2 spy ship being downed so they could tell the world that they had captured the spy ship. The allegations of the Soviet Union repeated through John Keppel, who was important in our State Department and also worked in the Soviet Union. This story is, and maybe you've read it by now, that when they told the American plane, the Korean Airline, to stop, or they fired a missile, few seconds after that, a bomb went off, and this suggests that it was detonated after the jet fired its missile, and they wanted to get the plane down to prove it was a spying mission, but the plane had an explosion on it that blew it up. It was destroyed by an explosion, and this is similar as Gary Powers was supposed to take cyanide and kill himself. Of course, he was the only one on that plane, but in this case, this plane, according to the new article in the Soviet Union, was bombed either by a kerosene explosion or a remote-controlled bomb. The article on this comes from the Soviet Union and from Italy, and the allegations were that this was a spying plane. Of course, we know that a year later. And to give credit to Larry Flint, and he sure paid his dues for doing it, he was the first person who ran full-page articles in the newspaper saying, "Stop that hysteria about the 007. I think it's a provocateur situation." This week in the Monterey Herald, there was a story, Korean jet shot down a year ago Saturday. Mystery still shrouds flight 007 fate. And this article is more liberal than what we saw a year ago or when I wrote my story on the Korean Airline. It says, new questions have been raised, new data asserted, new answers proposed. the chances are the public will never know the answers to these questions. And then it goes on how the United States stressed through George Shultz how horrible the Soviet Union was, that we reacted with revulsion to the attack, and how President Reagan was so critical. And then it goes on to say within days, the U.S. officials began softening their criticism, particularly their contention that the Russians knowingly destroyed a civilian plane. So that's an update on the Korean airline. This story, as they say, we may never know, because when they don't want you to know, a lot of the facts are kept hidden. If they had radio transcripts of the Soviet Union talking to the Korean pilot, then Japan had the same transcripts of what the Korean pilot was thinking or doing at the time. And that is the gist of what I wrote about, that it was a kamikaze situation to make a martyr out of Larry McDonald, similar to John Birch, who was killed over China, get rid of him with the Western Goals investigation, and dump him at the same time because of the links of the police department, which, again, goes back to the over the Gestapo. You can't have that in the news. And he was the man who put in the computers that would link the Los Angeles Police Department to the Pentagon by way of his offices. That's a good reason enough to unload this guy. And that's what I said a year ago. Just I started writing that article within days after the crash. Larry Flynn held it up for about a month or two because they wanted to check every single reference before it was printed in the Hustler. Now, in the convention, I want to mention a part of the Republican convention, just one segment of it, that is very pertinent to the research that I've done for so many years. The Washington Times is running full-page pictures of Ronald Reagan, and I would like to do just 1 hour on Reverend Moon's newspaper and the way they're covering the stories. Naturally, it's slanted, but you cannot imagine unless you take it. And you might take it. It's $22 for 3 months, and you'll get the best reading. You can't buy current books on the news that you would get out of the Washington Times, particularly with the elections coming up. But Wednesday, August 22nd, 1984, page 12B, the Washington Times has a full-page picture and a story, Young Americans for Freedom. For over 24 years, the nation's largest conservative youth organization, with national chairman Robert E. Dolan, and they have printed the Sharon Statement, S-H-A. The Sharon Statement is about 12 paragraphs that was written in Sharon, Connecticut, S-H-A-R-O-N, Connecticut, at the home of William Buckley, and it is what Young Americans for Freedom is about. Below that is a picture about 8 inches tall. This covers a full page of the American troops with a flag similar to the posture of Iwo Jima, all hands standing around this flag. U.S. troops liberate Grenada. Now, Grenada was the place where the Soldiers of Fortune agent Mr. Brown was on the island, right, along with our military, where Michael Ledeen was there rummaging through papers. Ledeen working with Licio Gelli, the Vatican, the Disinformation Service. A big inch column victory over communism. And Ronald Reagan is planning to go down there in October, just as General Douglas MacArthur returned to the Philippines. This is a visual election, and the people, and all the people who sat silent about that invasion and the meaning of that invasion, have lost the point. The Young Americans for Freedom are proud of that. And then below that is a picture of Ronald Reagan, one of the first founding members of Young Americans for Freedom, and they want a membership. But with the election in Dallas, Texas, not the election, the nomination of Ronald Reagan in Dallas, Texas, in 1984, we make a full cycle from the Moon paper to the Young Americans for Freedom, the Sharon Statement, the Grenada, the Ronald Reagan, published on Wednesday, and Reagan took his acceptance speech on Thursday, the same day that the book depository was set on fire. Now, in the Rebel article that I did in November of 1983, on the section on 1960, I put it in chronological order how the teams were set up to murder John Kennedy. And in 1960, I wrote about Young Americans for Freedom. In 1960, candidate Richard Nixon was qualified for the job of president. A lot of influential people were sure he was the only choice. Nixon was familiar with every Red Scare tactic from his first campaign against Jerry Voorhees in 1946 versus Helen Douglas in the Senate, working for Senator Joe McCarthy, he knew it well. The prosecution of Alger Hess with flimsy evidence proved his value alone. I'm reading what I put into print just a year ago, less than a year ago now. But Nixon had accumulated strong connections with members of the crime syndicate, the Vatican hierarchy, defense industry, and no Nazis. He knew them all. What if he lost after 17 years of preparation? Would there be a backup team for the future? Could the Pentagon or Reinhard Gehlen visualize leaving the entire United States presidency to chance election? I'm reading this to you now, and many of you have the article, because as you read new books coming out all the time, there's new information, such as this one on Delachaye, or the Seymour Hersh book of Henry Kissinger with the top Nazis in Germany after the war, and Fritz Kramer, or James Angleton with the Vatican setting up the fascist cells, and with Klaus Barbie in France, Italy, Germany, and the United States. Would they leave it to chance that John Kennedy would be elected? No, they had already controlled the major countries in Europe. Why would they leave that election to chance? And that's what I asked. And I wrote, remember what happened to Senator Robert Kennedy on the eve of the primary victory in 1968. They can't get that close to losing it again, and they had to do away with him. With both Kennedys gone, Nixon finally made it. And just last week, you read in all the wire service stories, declassified documents, how the Democratic candidates were all threatened with death in 1968. Hubert Humphrey, Eugene McCarthy, and of course, George Wallace was shot in 19... He wasn't a Democratic candidate. I guess he was. He was shot when he was running against Nixon in 1972 because he was taking too many votes against Nixon at that time. Nixon was supposed to be elected, and Ronald Reagan would follow him. And I wrote in the Rebel, September 1960, 2 months before the elections, William F. Buckley Jr. launched the Young Americans for Freedom from the grounds on his Connecticut estate. That is the Sharon statement that they wrote at the time. Prior to that date, Buckley's career was with conservatives after he graduated from Yale. He served the CIA in Japan from 1950 to 1954. He did a stint in the CIA with Mexico with E. Howard Hunt. He was co-founder of Young Americans for Freedom with Douglas Caddy, whose offices later were used by the CIA and the Howard Hughes for dirty tricks during the Watergate story and getting Richard Nixon reelected at that time. They needed the dirty tricks out of the Mullen associates. And then I went on that the Young Americans for Freedom during the Reagan-Nixon years, pardon me, were conducted by Tom Charles Houston, and that was the Operation Chaos, the COINTEL program that Nixon cooked up. And in the Rebel, I wrote the selected advisory board for YAF was a who's who of oldies. Even at that time, Senator Strom Thurmond, Senator John Tower, Mr. Ronald Reagan, General Charles Willoughby from the Philippines and from Germany, and Mr. Robert Morris. Now, William Buckley and Robert Morris are Knights of Malta, and I went back to the Nazi connections of Senator Joe McCarthy. They both worked with him. And, of course, going from Young Americans Freedom to 1961, a year after Buckley founded Young Americans for Freedom, the group from Munich, Germany, that were to take over the YAF, moved to Fort Worth, Dallas area, to Mr. Robert Morris, who would be their host. And, of course, they were involved in the murder of John Kennedy, and the John Birch Society helped fund them and their activities with General Walker and that gang. And, of course, Mr. H.L. Hunt's home was used, and I mentioned that, for the Republican Convention. So this is the full cycle of YAF, not investigated, covered up. I don't believe any researcher outside of myself has ever lingered on this evidence in 20 years, and I want to know why. Isn't that strange? The time is up now for this first half of the tape. We'll continue in the second half in one moment.